Whatever Mikel Arteta and his Arsenal squad did in Dubai in their winter break, it clearly worked because the Gunners have been firing consistently ever since. They've won 8 consecutive Premier League games to go top of the table, and they're all set for a monumental scrap with Liverpool and Manchester City in the next couple of months. However, their Champions League hopes are in the balance after a timid 1-0 defeat against Porto at the Dragao. Can they turn things around on Tuesday night at the Emirates? I'm Kevin Hatchard, and this is Football Only Better. Nothing timid about my top tipping team, starting with Mark O'Hare. Mark, Arsenal found a way to win against Brentford at the weekend. Kai Havertz grabbing a late winner. I thought that was probably more significant a win than all of these 5-0s and 6-0s they've been racking up in the last few weeks. But they weren't like themselves at all at the Dragao. They were really timid and boring. This makes this quite a big test, and it probably didn't need to be this big a test, did it?
No, absolutely not. As you say, that tremendous Premier League run, but this is the only blemish they've had in 9 games now. And yeah, timid is a fair reflection, a fair assessment on that performance. It was very uncharacteristic compared to what we've come to expect from Arsenal in 2024. I thought the defeat was probably harsh on the balance of play, especially coming so late, and what a great goal it was. But they did definitely play with the handbrake on. They failed to have a shot on target, and it was almost like they were playing for a point and trying to get Porto back to the Emirates and to almost do them at home, if you like. And yeah, I still do expect them to progress, but they have obviously increased the difficulty levels, trailing and chasing. You expect them to play on the front foot now, especially in front of the home supporters. I think they will be more aggressive, more attacking. Whereas I think we'll see a very similar Porto approach to what we saw in the Dragao. They will be battening down the hatches, utilising the counter-attack and, you know, aiming to frustrate, disrupt. They'll be milking the stoppages, trying to manage the game as Porto do quite successfully on the continent. So, yeah, originally when I was looking at this game, I was quite surprised to see Arsenal as short as 125 on the exchange to win the game in 90 minutes. Now, I'm sure we all probably do expect Arsenal to win and to probably progress as well, but it did feel slightly disrespectful to Porto. So I sort of dipped into the Asian handicap market and saw you could get Porto +2 at a backable price. And, you know, when you consider the only way that bet loses is if Arsenal win by at least 3 goals, that's a hell of a handicap hurdle to overcome in a Champions League knockout tie. And, you know, I would be surprised if Arsenal did beat Porto by at least 3 goals. But I've decided to go elsewhere because whilst that is a big handicap hurdle, we're looking to make money, really. And I'm not really get that excited by a push. And the likeliest scenario, I think, if Arsenal are to win this is it's probably going to be by at least 1 to 2 goals, possibly 3. They're more than capable of winning by 3 or more, obviously. But with the +2, you're only really going to get paid out if Porto avoid defeat or Arsenal win by exactly 1 goal. So, I've kind of altered my approach, really. I'm still going to be pro-Arsenal, but I do think, you know, with that presumption that they might win by 1 or 2, I thought the opportunity to back Arsenal to win and under 3.5 goals at 2.15 was a more appealing play with the, you know, you're effectively backing the 1-0, 2-0, 3-0 in a 2-1 home victory. Now, as I say, we know Arsenal have got the firepower to score 4 or more. They've done that quite consistently in recent weeks. But, you know, Porto are being priced up similarly to Brentford at the weekend, and I do think that does them a little bit of a disservice. Clearly, the budget is dwarfed by Arsenal and most of the Premier League big boys as well. But Conte Sau is such a capable coach, and this club.
Well,
is
he's
so
the star, isn't he? Really, the coach is absolutely the star here.
Yeah, and I feel like I say it every season when we do Porto in the Champions League, but he's destined for bigger things, and I'm adamant he'll be playing, or coaching, I should say, in Serie A in the next year or two, but it still hasn't happened. Still waiting for him to get that opportunity, but yeah, they're a club who are so accustomed to these big Champions League nights, occasions, knockout fixtures, if you like, and they shouldn't really be overawed by the task in hand. I think defensively they are much more capable than a bottom half Premier League side as well. So I think we might see something similar to the Brentford match on Saturday, where Arsenal will need to dig in, be patient and wait for the big opportunities to come, because there is a stubbornness about Porto, which we saw in the first leg. And I suspect Arsenal might have to work hard, but I do expect them to progress. But it's not a strong selection because, as we've seen, Arsenal have got the ability to cut loose. But alternatively, the prices didn't really leap off the page at me, but I thought it was quite interesting that Clément Turpin is the referee here, the Frenchman, who is ordinarily quite a low-card referee, but he absolutely adores the limelight and is prone to going a bit crazy in the big matches that matter when he's put under pressure. So a red card is 3-1 here. He's done 46 previous Champions League games. He's given 11 reds. He was also given 24 penalties.
Oh my God.
46-game sample. But it increases if you go back to his record since 2018-19 onwards to the present day. He's given 10 reds and 14 penalties in 31 Champions League games. So that's 0.45 pens per game and 0.31 reds per game. So both options, the red card and the penalty to be awarded, will be valued based on the odds on offer on the Betfair site. But still a little bit tighter than perhaps I hoped.
Big Bad Boise back in the building. Alex Boyes from betting.betfair.com is with us. Boise, Arsenal went out to Portuguese opposition in Europe last season when they were beaten by Sporting. I know country comparisons don't really make much sense, but it's that kind of level of quality, isn't it? That's the issue. So Arsenal do have to be wary because Porto have Galeno, they've got Evan Nilsson, they've got players who can do damage in the blink of an eye.
Yeah, absolutely. And to be honest, you know, Porto, they are on a decent run as well. I think it's 5 wins in 6 in all competitions, which includes both the Arsenal game and they thumped Benfica 5-0 as well in that run.
It's absolutely.
I'm similar to Mark. The 1.25 Arsenal price I thought was really short, if I'm honest, especially after that first leg. So I definitely didn't want to get involved in any sort of match odds stuff. And I'm kind of, again, Mark's, I agree with Mark, what he's saying about Porto's price being fairly surprising, a little bit too big, I think. I wouldn't put anyone off chancing them to qualify or anything at 9-1 just because I think it's slightly overpriced, basically. I'm a bit like you as well, Kev. Like, yes, it doesn't really mean much that they lost to Sporting, but that historical data that Arsenal haven't been in a quarterfinal since 2010 in the Champions League, I think that's got to play on the minds of the players a little bit. You know, historical data, excuse me, doesn't mean as much as sort of recent form and trends. But yeah, I mean, I don't know if Mikel Arteta has employed a dog named quarterfinal to run around the training ground like he did with that that very silly wind dog.
Oh, visualization, yes. Yeah, well, yeah, maybe. I wouldn't
bought
put
a dog,
it past
didn't he? He called it Win, and it run around the training ground every day. It was all over that Amazon documentary. So maybe they've got a cockapoo called quarterfinal somewhere in the building.
Maybe.
I don't know. But,
maybe.
I do think they play on the minds of players the fact that Arsenal haven't been at that stage of this competition for so long. And if they don't manage an early goal, you know, I think, Porto, you said, Kev, they're one of the sides that could really make it difficult for Arsenal, the way they kind of manage the game. And
yeah, they're very awkward.
Really frustrate them. Absolutely. And like, they will be sucking the atmosphere out of the crowd. They will be trying to play on every stoppage they can. And, you know, they'll definitely take some heart from the way they kept Arsenal at arm's length in the opening leg. So yeah, I'm staying away from the match odds. The player that I actually wanted to highlight when I was looking through was actually Conte Sao's son. First of all, I'm really glad, Mark, that you had the stage first to pronounce Conte Sao, because I was dreading being the first one to try and get that out of there. I was
disappointed now. Disappointed.
you would laugh if the way I phonetically spelled it out on my page just to make sure I say it as it seems.
Because, see, that's the dedication we're talking about, you see.
Oh, my God. That's anyway, obviously he's the son of the manager. He's back on loan at Porto from Ajax, actually bought him, but it looks like they'll probably re-sign him in the summer. I think there's a 10 million fee agreed or something like that. But yeah, I remember him from the first leg. He was really in a battle on that right-hand side, and he was really, you know, in duels, tackles, fouls. And then I actually looked back, and he'd actually won and committed three fouls each in that game, which is quite high for a player in a single sort of 90-minute match. Stinge will probably know, but then I since found I think Porto's most carded player this season as well. He's got 8 in the league, which is the most. You know, half of those have come in games as a sub as well. And his foul average committed is kind of 2 per 90. You know, he's a good player. He's only young, 21. You know, I think the future's bright for him. And he's always going to go at his man. And I think you said on the counter, this could be really where he kind of hurts Arsenal, or they at least have to try and stop him. And I was looking through his last sort of, since the turn of the year, he's basically started starting. Before that, it was very kind of in and out of the team. But yeah, his last sort of, like, if I just quickly run through some of his last kind of appearances, he's, you know, 1 foul, 1 foul committed, 2-1, 2-2. He got booked in the Arsenal game as well when he committed three and was fouled three times. There's another 3-3 in there, another booking when he committed two fouls, won two more, won three more. He really is involved in those sort of duels. So maybe he bought his dad like a nice guitar that he always wanted for Christmas or something, because he wasn't in the team beforehand. So maybe
I can imagine Conte Sarr being quite hard on him. I can imagine him like the kind of Dardai factor at Hertha previously. Like, you have to work even harder to get a place in the team.
Well, nothing says Christmas like a bit of old-fashioned bribery in the family, does it, to get back on the pitch? So, for me, anyway, he's 5-6 to commit 2+ fouls, is Conte Sarr. But for me, if you look at the Arsenal left-backs, they're always well-priced because they don't commit that many in Kivor and Zinchenko. They really don't. So you always get good prices. I mean, Kivor actually committed 5 in the first leg, 5 fouls. And he's now on a 6-game sort of starting running the team as well. So he may well start again here. He's 13-5 for 2+ fouls, which I thought was nice. He is 9-1 for 3, for those who really want to go a little bit bigger. And Zinchenko, if he starts, he's 4-1 and 13-1 for 2 and 3 fouls. And that's actually the longest odds of any player in that market. So look out for either of those when the teams are announced. I mean, Arsenal also committed 22 fouls in leg one, which is way above their sort of per game average
it was a
of
big
around
battle.
12.
Yeah, it was a big battle. Porto played the game they wanted to play, effectively.
Yeah, and I'm hoping it, you know, fingers crossed it goes in a similar vein. Mark's mentioned the ref, which I did not know. You know, hopefully he tries to get involved as much as he can as well. So, I kind of wanted to mention Conte Sarr's booking price as well. I mentioned his card count, but it was less than 2-1, so I didn't think it was overly attractive. So, yeah, left-back Arsenal fouls for me.
Finally, odds compiler, tipster, and a man who's been giggling away at Boise there, Mark Stinchcombe, is with us. Stinch, your assessment of Arsenal's chances here?
Very much in line with the market, to be honest. They're 1-3 to qualify. They're 6-1 to lift the trophy, and yet they're a goal behind in a in a second leg tie. Like I said in the first leg, I really don't rate this Porto team, and you know they did a decent job of keeping Arsenal quiet, but it wasn't the Arsenal we've seen predominantly, certainly in 2024. However, I think Boise makes a good point that albeit it's you know, a lot of different players from previous eras in the Champions League, they have been eliminated, Arsenal, in 9 of their previous 10 Champions League games where they've lost the first leg. Although the one time was against Porto in 2009-10 season where they won 5-0. And I could really see something similar. You know, they've been great at home this season in the Champions League.
They battered Lens, didn't they? Didn't they absolutely tear strips off Lens, who are quite a good side?
They scored 12 and they conceded 0 in the group stage. And we know we've seen them in recent weeks in the Premier League just absolutely battering sides. And, you know, the game is literally going to start with Arsenal attacking from minute one because Porto do have that one goal advantage. So,
yeah.
I don't want to get involved in any of the match odds or qualify or whatever because I think all of that is already massively factored in. So I understand what the guys are saying. You know, the occasion does play a part because obviously all the numbers are driven kind of unemotionally, if you like. So there is perhaps an angle to try and side with Porto in some sort of way. But mention obviously Arsenal historically, Porto. Never nice when they travel to England. In their previous 21 visits, they'd never won, drawn 3 and lost 18. You know, I think that definitely will play on the minds of, again, not the players, because it'll be a lot of different players from previous visits, but certainly in the, you know, Conte Sarr was a Porto player. I believe, but obviously, you know, the fans, etc. They'll probably be nervous having previously travelled here. You know, they've been eliminated in the last 7 meetings with English teams in Europe. So,
at least 3 of those were Liverpool, weren't they? I imagine. Didn't they have a run where they kept running into Liverpool and getting absolutely smacked?
Yeah, I think that was like the sort of Torres and Gerrard, Ben Ayoun, Peter Crouch, that sort of era, I think.
We've had some later ones as well. I remember Sadio Mane absolutely shredded them one game. Yeah.
Yeah, so they generally don't mark up very well against English sides. I think I mentioned when we discussed this game a couple of weeks ago that, I know they beat Benfica recently. I didn't see that one come in, but the majority of the season they've been sort of playing for third place, really, with Sporting and Benfica so much more prolific in front of goals. I think there's likely going to be no Mehdi Taremi, although he has struggled for goals this season. I mentioned Everaldo doesn't have a very good record at Champions League level. So, but my bet here, I'm going to delve into a similar angle with of Boise, and then Mark mentioned the referee. I'm going to go for Kai Havertz to get booked at 7-2. He was booked in the first leg for a stray arm. And that's not the main reason, but obviously, you know, we know it's going to be another battle. You know, we know what Portuguese sides bring to the table, when, especially when they're defending a.
We know what Porto do.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, was it the 2003 UEFA Cup final against Celtic?
Yes,
they were very naughty in that game, and I think that's a trend that's continued for many of year. And I think Mr. Havertz could easily fall into the trap of lashing out, perhaps. He's on 9 yellow cards already this season, and I think crucially for me, it's the big games where the tensions are high and there's a lot on the line, and he seems to lose his temper a little bit. He's been booked twice against Liverpool, Man City, Spurs, Newcastle. He's even booked in a friendly against Barcelona at the beginning of the season. And yeah, I mean, no wonder in a way. He commits 1.1 fouls per game, and in Europe that actually rises to 2.3 per game. I'm surprised he's only had one yellow so far in the Champions League. I believe he had to get three to get a suspension, so that won't be in the back of his mind, because he'd still have one to spare. So yeah, I mean, Arsenal have got to really go for it, and there could be even an element where, you know, once Arsenal are ahead, if they do get ahead on aggregate, you know, that will be where Arsenal and the dark arts come out, and time wasting, etc. So I think there's a lot in our favour here.
We know injury time goals can be a pain in the pocket if they ruin your bet. Now, you've got 90-minute payout to rescue you. If the clock hits 90 minutes and you've got the right result as it stands, your bet wins when the match ticks into injury time. T's and C's in the description. 18+. BeGambleAware.org. Barcelona face Napoli on Tuesday, or Napoli as most people call them, not whatever I just called them, with the scores locked at 1-1. Boise, a game between two sides who haven't really been anywhere near their best this season. Various factors for that. Numbskull coaches for Napoli in terms of Barcelona. Loads of injuries. Just a bit of a mess, really. However, it gives us a very intriguingly poised tie.
It does, actually. It is poised. I mean, it was only until kind of the latter stages of the first leg when Napoli actually got into this game. Barcelona actually did a really good away performance. Obviously, took the lead and really restricted Napoli. And I don't know if that's just sort of something Barcelona trying to change. You know, they had a really bad run of shipping loads of goals. There was that 5-3 Villarreal. They had a 3-3 with, was it Granada, I think. And they've actually got 3 clean sheets on the spin now. And they're really sort of starting to nullify their opponents. You know, when you look at like kind of the expected goals against numbers in the most recent games. So perhaps a bit of more of a shift to try and, you know, stop the opponents rather than just thinking we'll win every game by scoring one more than you. When I was looking through this game, I mean, if I asked you, Kevin, which player in La Liga had created the most chances, big chances, had the highest expected assist, do you think you could name that player?
Oh, in La Liga?
Yes. He obviously plays for Barcelona. That's the hint. But
well, yeah, exactly. That's what surprised me, because I was thinking of like Vinicius Junior or Bellingham or somebody like that. Who could it be on Barcelona's team? They've all been terrible.
I'm really glad you're struggling, only because
Rafinha. It can't be Rafinha. He's not good enough.
I was surprised.
Gundogan.
So, Stinch has got it.
So, Gundogan.
Yeah, which it just surprised me. Like in terms of that, in the outright league, I thought that was really interesting. You know, he's also got 6 league assists, Gundogan, this season, which is only bettered by 4 players in the whole league. He's created 48 more chances in the league than any of his teammates. The thing is, Barcelona, they're creative players. He rotates them so often that maybe they don't get the same volume of minutes, of course.
Yeah, that's true.
But
that's true.
But he also leads their squad per 90 for chances created too, just over three. Still the most of any of their players. So, you know, in the Champions League, only Bellingham and Saka have got more assists than Gundogan. And he also sits in the top five in the Champions League for chances created and expected assists. So in leg one, he was directly involved in seven of Barca's 12 shots. He had four himself and created the three more. And then in his last, in his last few appearances, let's start with the Mallorca game at the weekend. Three chances created, four shots, three on target. Bilbao, three chances created. Getafe, five chances created. Granada, four chances created, one shot on target and an assist. Deportivo, goal and assist. Osasuna, four chances created, two shots. And then that Villarreal game that I mentioned where they lost 5-3, he scored and assisted, but he created 10 chances on his own in that game. And he had four shots. So he was involved in over 60% of their shots in that game. So I just thought it was really interesting reading. You know, I think we know his final seasons at City turned to a real goal threat, you know, around the time Rodri signed, and his role changed slightly. But in terms of number of assists, this is now his best overall in a single season. He's got nine in all competitions. So when we look at the prices then, well, you've got 12 players priced up shorter than him to register an assist in this game, 10 of which are his teammates. So that gave me a real tempting price to get involved. He's 9-2 to assist any time.
Wow, that is big.
For those who want to be a little bit more conservative, it's just over 2-1. I think it was 11-5 last time I looked for him to score or assist. I'm not sure if he will be reassumed penalty duty because he missed one at the weekend and Lewandowski's in. I don't know who trumps who in that sort of pecking order, but it's also 11-10, so odds against for a single shot on target. And I mentioned some of his shot numbers there, and he could well be on penalties. And he had three in leg one, three shots on target. So I'm going to back the outright assist at 9-2, a shot on target at 11-10, and two shots on target at 11-2.
Lovely stuff. And Stinch, that kind of leads me on to what I was going to ask you about Barcelona, actually, because Gundogan, as Boise says, has been doing really well since going there from Manchester City, but they've got no other midfielders. They've got Gavi out, they've got Pedri out, De Jong, I think, is out now as well for this game. So, I mean, you're really struggling, aren't you?
Yeah, he lost De Jong, I think, was it in the game after the Napoli one? Injury. And I expect him to be out for, I think, a few more weeks, actually. Yeah. And he's been deploying Anders Christensen in central midfield as a result. So that probably frees up Gundogan a bit more to get forward. So it probably helps Boise's bet, which sounds really good. Again, we discussed this game a couple of weeks ago. I just feel like I want to oppose both teams. Maybe the draw is the bet again. I'm not really a fan of backing the draw, to be honest. Barcelona 4-5, over 2.5 goals is 4-5. 15 of Barca's last 21 games have gone over 2.5 goals. And generally in second legs, we do see a higher increase in goals. So maybe that's the way to go. But I just think with obviously Napoli now on their third manager of the season, he's only been there for a few games, just creates a lot of unknowns, really. We don't really know too much. We haven't got too much to go off of likely how he's going to play or decision making, team selection, etc. I was surprised to see, for example, Kvaratskhelia. I think he's into double figures now in Serie A, yet to score in the Champions League this season. That's obviously the Rudy Garcia, Mazzarri effect, I would say, rather than him as a player. I think we all are huge fans of him on the podcast. So,
He's been creating. I'm sure one of you guys said earlier in the season he's been getting into good positions. But whereas last season he was getting the assists and the goals, it hasn't quite happened for him this season. But of course, he hasn't had Osimhen for a lot of the games alongside him as well. And that makes a massive difference.
Yeah, and then I think Mazzarri was fielding him sometimes as a number 10 as well, which probably not quite in his repertoire. He is that left winger that loves to go at his man and maybe not so much a player with his back to goal coming deep to receive the ball and then having to turn or whatever, although he is a fantastic guy at turning. So don't really want to get with either team. I think it is crucial. You mentioned about Barcelona's injuries as well. So I was just going to literally, I think it's a bit of coincidence, really, that the bet won in the first leg. But I thought, if you've got two of the best strikers in the world, why not back them both to score, given that the expectation is that it will be a goal-heavy game. So Lewandowski and Victor Osimhen both to score is 5-1, which I think is attractive enough. Lewandowski obviously rested at the weekend as well, so I think he that's good. He'll come into the game a bit fresher. 18 goals this season. He's averaging over 3 shots per game at home. Over 2 of those are coming inside the box. He actually had 4 shots against Napoli in the first leg inside the box. So I think if Gundogan's feeding him, yeah, great chance for that bet to land, as well as the Lewandowski part. Osimhen, as you mentioned, season a little bit disrupted with injuries and away for the AFCON, but he's still got 13 goals in 20 games. He's averaging over 3 shots per game away from home as well, and including over 2 inside the box. So I think they're both going to get chances, and I think we know that both of these defenses are susceptible. So in a game where I say over 2.5 goals is favourite, odds on, I'm very much happy to back the two in-form strikers to score at 5-1.
And Mark, the thing to remember here as well, people may or may not know, Barcelona aren't at Camp Nou and haven't been all season. They've been in Montjuic, the Olympic Stadium across the way. It's just nowhere near as imposing a venue, is it really?
No, it's really not. If anyone's been to Barcelona and sort of had a little nose around where the Olympics used to be held back in, was it 92? Yeah, it's kind of detached a little bit. It's quite eerie actually around that area.
That's quite nice. Stadiums. Probably Espanyol's quite nice. That weird little village they've got that they created. Yeah. That's quite nice.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's all nice. It's just, it's been desolate every time I've gone there and kind of had a little look around. It's quite strange, really, that it's kind of been just, once they left to ruin, but it's just, yeah, you don't associate.
It's not in the hubbub of the main city, is it? That's the issue, is it?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, this is, I think, a really interesting, fascinating game now. We were quite sort of depressing when we were sort of previewing it a couple of weeks ago, because both teams were a horrendous place in their campaigns. Barcelona have improved since then. I think it's no coincidence that Ter Stegen's return has helped to shore things up a little bit defensively. And Napoli, you know, Walter Mazzarri was sacked, what, hours before that first leg, really. And but they have picked
so
up
nuts.
Since Francesco Calzona came into the club. And the first leg, Barcelona did play very well for the most part. They pressed Napoli very, very well, put them under real pressure. Napoli didn't even have a shot in the first half. But they took the lead and looked to be in command, really. But when you've got a player of the ability of Osimhen, you don't need a huge amount of opportunity to bite back. And his finish was outstanding, really. It was their only shot on target. But I'm expecting a better Napoli this time around, because there has been a kind of sea change in their performances under Calzona. They've turned Juventus over, absolutely annihilated Sassuolo. And look, Sassuolo are struggling this season, but score 6 times. They could have scored 16, really, that day. And on Friday night, I thought, whilst the result wasn't brilliant, they were held by Torino at home. They did have 22 shots in that game, and Torino are not a team that are easy to open up and have your way with the way in which Napoli did. So I think they will bring the noise here, at least in forward areas. Defensively, yeah, like Stinch says, I think they are susceptible still, stylistically and individually. I have my doubts over that team, even if Ramani's back. So he and Jesus don't fill me with confidence at the centre-half. But I think they will be bullish about their prospects here, because injuries, as you guys have said, have really affected Barca. That midfield is looking relatively ropey, really. I mean, Christensen's been there for a little while. I still don't like him in the holding midfield role. But then you've got Gundogan, and Ferran Lopez who might be filling in for the third role.
Yeah.
Defensively, Araujo should come back in, but might be Inigo Martinez. Otherwise, it could be the 17-year-old Pau Cubarsí. You've got Cancelo and Koundé, fullback. I think Barca are gettable there, absolutely. But going forward, I've criticised him a few times this season, but Lewandowski's kind of rekindled his goal-scoring form in the past few weeks. Yamal's still doing wonderful things. João Félix is there. So they've got match winners as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you look at their recent performances, yes, you can see clean sheets, and they've limited Mallorca, Getafe and Athletic to very little. But I think Napoli will come here and play. And You know, it's a tall order to keep Osimhen, Kvaratskhelia, Politano, Zielinski, Raspadori quiet. So Stinch alluded to it. I'm happy to go over 2.5 here at 1.8. I think that's a really nice price for two teams who are set up to score and attack, but have holes defensively.
Yeah, it says a lot about Barcelona's season that one of their best players this season is effectively a small child in Lamine Yamal.
Who they've played week after week, relentlessly, after week after week after week.
They've learned nothing. They've learned nothing from getting Pedri injured, from getting Gavi injured. They've just played them again and again and again. It's utterly ridiculous. But there we go. The Cheltenham Festival is this week. If you listen to Cheltenham Only Better, you can get the thoughts of the legendary Paul Nicholls ahead of the festivals. Loads of amazing written preview content as well on our website, betting.betfair.com. So make sure you check all of that out ahead of the festival. On Wednesday, it's also finally balanced between Borussia Dortmund and PSV. 1-1 after a cagey, poor quality first leg, I would say. Stinch, Dortmund do generally have a strong home record, but they are a tough team to trust 100%, aren't they?
Yeah, this is probably the most balanced game that we've got of the four remaining Champions League ties. Dortmund coming in here at evens. PSV were a similar price in the home leg, and to qualify, Dortmund 4-6 to qualify versus 6-5 PSV. So very, very tight. and I don't think that's reflected in the goals, because over 2.5 goals is the big favourite here at 4-6. And I mentioned before, when you look at Dortmund in the Champions League, I think there's a clear plan under Terzic to try and keep things tight. It's not any rocket science at all, not just from the results, but from the underlying numbers as well. 11 of 12 under Terzic in the Champions League gone under 2.5 goals, an average of just 1.67 per game. So it's none of this like 2.3, 2.4, you know. It is a lot of 1-0s and 0-0s in there as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's always really difficult as a bettor to try and work out how good Dutch teams are when they come up in the European competitions. You know, you see Matthijs Kesman score hatfuls in the Eredivisie and then one for Chelsea. Or you get Luis Suarez and Ruud van Nistelrooy that absolutely, yeah, you know, carve
it up. Was Alfonso Alves the one at Middlesbrough who was absolutely useless when he got to Middlesbrough? I seem to remember.
Alfonso Alves, I remember he scored two goals in a 2-0 win over Barrow in the FA Cup. So I'll have nothing said about him.
Oh, fair enough. Fair enough. Yes.
The scourge, there was a Brazilian flag in the riverside as he ran to the corner to defeat a non-league Barrow at the time.
Yeah, so I forgot Alfonso Alves was the scourge of Barrow. There we go. but yes, it is difficult, isn't it? Because PSV, clearly the best team in the Netherlands by miles this season. However, Feyenoord have dropped off a bit. Ajax have been hopeless. So it's difficult to judge where they're at.
Yeah, it's really hard to quantify. I feel like, you know, you say, I don't know, you work out PSV's average goals per game of like 2.8 or something, and then you have to apply like a big factor, maybe like a 40% factor to it or something, to get to what you think they should be at. So it's really, really difficult. But I think we've got a decent idea of them this season against the likes of Sevilla, Lons and Arsenal as well. They scored 9 goals in those 7 Champions League games. And when you look at them in the Eredivisie against the better teams, particularly in recent weeks away from home, 1-1 at Ajax, 1-0 defeat at Feyenoord, I think that gives us a reasonable idea. And, you know, I'm not going to get excited about Luc de Jong up front for them. So I think rinse and repeat, really. First leg backed under 3 goals at around about 1.8. It's 1.95 in the second leg, which is understandable. As I say, you expect an increase in the amount of goals in second legs as there's more on the line, as ties open up with teams actually needing to press, knowing that there's no other games left for them to get the goals they need to qualify. And if you look in the first leg, if you remove the penalty, there was just 1.63 expected goals. And I mentioned when we discussed the fact that the away goals had been removed, that only 8 of 32 first legs had gone over 2.5 goals. Those same 32 second legs, it's just 16 over 2.5 goals. So it's really, really 50-50. And obviously, we're not talking about 2.5 goal line here. We're talking about the 3-goal line. So in my mind, I think we've got like half a goal in our favour as well. So yeah, the only way this bet will lose back in under 3 Asian goals is if there's 4 or more goals. And I think we're in for another tight and cagey match, to be honest.
Yeah, Mark, it's a funny one, this, isn't it? Because PSV actually, I think, went behind, came back, made some chances, but they weren't mega convincing at home. And it was almost as if they thought, well, you know, a draw's not too bad. We'll go to Germany and see what we can do. But I don't think either team covered themselves in glory in that first leg.
I think PSV edged it. I just wonder whether they'll sort of be made to pay for that because... Yeah, I thought they started the better, had the better of the chances in what was a reasonably open first half, but didn't capitalise. Dortmund did, when Daniel Malen with that kind of explosive finish. And then PSV did get their goal from the spot in the second half and still probably looked the most likely. But yeah, it wasn't perhaps as exciting and entertaining as some people suggested it could be with the Eredivisie team against the Bundesliga side. But yeah, I do wonder whether they'll be made to pay because obviously there was a great atmosphere in Eindhoven. You could tell the whole club were really up for that challenge. Now it's quite a tough task to go to Dortmund and pick up a positive result because Dortmund have been very good in the Champions League at the Westfalenstadion for quite some time. I think they haven't lost since 2021 at home in the Champions League. 2 defeats in the last 19, I think it is, as well, in the Champions League at home, one of which was against Man City. So they've got a decent pedigree, already turned over Newcastle quite comprehensively in the group stages, held PSG when they just needed to avoid defeat, really, to finish top of the group as well. And PSG needed to get a result to stay in the competition. So they have kind of, you know, risen to the challenges when necessary. So I know they can be maddeningly inconsistent, especially away from home, but I do trust them a bit more at home, especially in this kind of environment. And the exchange price of 216 on Dortmund, it's appealing enough for me to take. It's not a massive edge on the market at all, but you know, to back them at 216 at home to PSV Eindhoven is good enough for me here in what is a difficult betting heat to decipher. PSV have slowed down in recent weeks. They failed to win half of their last 16 games across all competitions. They've conceded in 6 of the last 9 in the Eredivisie, which includes a 1-1 draw, as Stinch suggested, at an awful Ajax side. They were arguably second best as well when drawing 2-2 with Feyenoord at home a fortnight ago. Got knocked out of the cup away at Feyenoord without scoring a few weeks back as well. So they were running really hot.
Yes. Yeah, they got nailed.
thank you. if you look at the European campaign, they were in a soft pool. Obviously, Arsenal were in there too. And we touched on this before the first leg, but they had a dreadful Sevilla side who they totally burgled 4 points off across the 2 games, scoring late goals in both games. Then they faced Arsenal on match day 6 at home when Arsenal had already won the group and rested and rotated. So, you know, they're quite fortunate in that sense. And they weren't really convincing in either game against Lens either. So those fixtures could easily have gone either way. And PSV could even be playing Europa League football or even be out of Europe altogether. So I think Dortmund's kind of track record here is more trustworthy than what PSV have been producing. So I think the 216 is fair enough.
And finally, a fascinating clash between Atletico Madrid and runaway Serie A leaders Inter. Atleti 1-0 down from the first leg. And Boise, their whole season rests on this game. We've had this really weird duality about Atleti all season where they've been really, really good at the Metropolitano and then useless away from home. It's very, very curious.
Yeah, I was going to say at some point, they're definitely it's worth highlighting their home form, of course. We've probably done it plenty of times on this pod. And I think it's 1-1 defeat, only failed to score in one of those games, but that was fairly recently. I think, was it this month or last month? In February to Bilbao, I think. Yeah, the home form is pretty special. Weirdly, though, like in the Champions League in recent years, their home form has been pretty poor. So they did win all 3 group games this season at home. But could you argue, is there an argument they had a pretty good group with Celtic, Feyenoord and Lazio?
I think that's fair. They were, you know, the strongest team in that group, I think it's fair to say.
You know, because if you actually look back the last few years in this competition and Champions League, they've actually had a pretty torrid time at home, which is, from the outside, no one ever thinks that. You think Atletico at home, they definitely win 1-0 or 2-0 when they need to type thing. But yeah, recent years, it's only one win in 11 before this season in the Champions League. You know, and they failed to score in 6 of those games. So it's a bit of a strange kind of way to kind of piece it all together when you take into account their actual home form this season, but then you compare it with that European record. And obviously, overall, they're on a bit of a bad run with 2 wins in 9. I think it is in all competitions. They got beat at the weekend. You know, I didn't watch the game, but by what I've read and seen, it didn't look that they almost deserved to lose. And they certainly didn't put up much of an effort against Cadiz. So I think this is a really interesting tie, as you mentioned. And then you kind of look at Inter Milan. I mean, look, I thought Leeds were the form team in Europe. Never mind Inter Milan. I had to get us in, Kev, sorry.
I wondered when it was coming. We got there in the end.
11 wins in 12 for Leeds. Yeah, Inter Milan, 13 wins in a row in all competitions. And they haven't conceded in 9 of those, which is phenomenal. I mean, they've had, obviously, we know all season, they've had an amazing kind of clean sheet record. Jan Sommer, I mean, is he 35? Jan Sommer, 35 years old? Is he not that old? I'm sure he's in his mid-30s, but...
Yeah, he's a handsome devil, so it's difficult to tell, really.
He's having the season of his life, isn't he? Yeah, so, just like you must have to deal with that all the time, Kev.
Absolutely. People think I'm, you know, late 20s, that kind of thing. Yeah, Zoma's one of those annoying guys. He's good at everything. He's like really good guitarist. He's a really good cook. Blah, 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 blah. Dickening.
Well, he's also only conceded 15 goals in 35 games this season, which is pretty good going. Let's be fair, you know. Yeah, and it's not just, I mean, Serie A, they've all but wrapped that title up. It's not just in the league, you know, even in the Champions League, he's got the joint most clean sheets with 4. I mean, they have conceded 5 goals, but 3 came in one game to a Jean-Mario hat-trick of all people, which again...
He picked a really weird team, though, didn't he? He kind of cast that game away, I seem to.
Yeah, I mean, they still managed to draw the game anyway. They're 3-0 down, they drew 3-all. So I actually did want to flag that Inter are still 17-2 for the title. I think they've been tipped up fairly recently to maybe go all the way again. You obviously beaten finalists last season, of course, but those defensive numbers do promote a side that are going to challenge for trophies. The league's done. They've won the Supercoppa and they're 1-0 up here, of course. So I also noticed they were 4-1 on the Betfair Sportsbook just to reach the final. That was worth highlighting. You know, idea that this could be a tough second leg in Madrid. That means those prices maybe haven't come in as much as others. But if they do get through here and get a favourable draw in the quarters, you know, they could right kind of surge toward the top of the market. In that first leg you mentioned, Kev, they restricted Atletico to 7 shots, 0 on target. And Simeone's side now have lost 3 in a row without scoring. So I think even at 1-0 down, coming into the second leg, Simeone will still be thinking kind of, do not lose the tie before half-time with it just being 1 goal in it. I don't really see them coming out all guns blazing. I still think they'll try and think, right, with half an hour to go, are we in the tie sort of thing. So I was quite happy to look at unders, but that was trading... 8-11, so I'm obviously clearly not on my own there, thinking that there might not be many goals. So Inter to win the game and under 2.5 goals is 7-2, which I like a little bit more than Inter to win to nil, which is 5-2. And I don't see the kind of the away side running riot here, so that kind of gives us the 1-2-0 away win. If we actually bring in the 2-1 away win for Inter and under 3.5 as well, that goes to 2-1. So I like both of those. And also the 0-0 half-time to correct score for all the reasons I've just mentioned. That's priced at 7-4, you know, based on what I said about Simeone and the kind of defensive output of Inter all season. I think that's a nice little runner we could do in the first half. Cue the first minute own goal from...
Oh, of course. Absolutely. You're right about Zoma, by the way. He's 35. Somewhere in a basement, there is a picture of him getting older and older and older. Stinch. This is a really weird game, I think, because Antoine Griezmann, I think, has been one of the best players in the world, like in the last year or so. He's kind of just slowed down a little bit. You're not quite sure always where the goals are coming from, but he is so dangerous, Griezmann.
Might not be fair, like, Kev.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, there's that as well, isn't there? So that's a major... But if he doesn't make it, that's a major blow. Morata's very, very hit and miss. And then you're kind of relying on Correa and Samuel Lino, who are like very much. But there's not a lot there if Griezmann's not there.
Yeah, but this is the thing as well, though, that even if he is there, he's not fully fit. Like,
Yeah.
it doesn't. I wouldn't even. I would still consider him out in kind of in my thinking, even if he's there, because I know he's not fully fit. 18 goals this season. I was surprised to see how many he has got, even with being out injured. So yeah, he is a huge importance for this Atletico side. But I'm really excited about this one, Kev. Everyone's got to be. This is Diego Simeone in a Champions League knockout tie. Like,
Yeah.
there's got to be fireworks, surely. Not goals wise, obviously, just violence. Just surely,
Yes.
surely,
Well, it's the
surely.
Cholo Derby, isn't it? It's Atletico against his old Inter team. So, passion everywhere you look, really.
Yeah. And so, quiz question for you. 16 knockout ties at home, Diego Simeone for Atletico. How many of them have been under 2.5 goals, and how many goals exactly?
So out of the 16, this is home games, is it?
Yep, home knockout Champions League games, Simeone at Atletico.
15.
14.
Ah,
And
nearly.
how many goals out of those out in those 16 games?
Oh, that's a 20.
Exactly. So that's
There we
just
go. There
over
we
one per
go.
game. And Atletico in those 16, right? So we're talking about games against Barcelona. We're talking about games against Real Madrid, Bayern Munich. Atletico have conceded four. Four.
That's
Man City
crazy.
as well. Like,
That is crazy.
incredible. So, yeah, this is, again, rinse and repeat for me. Last time back under 2.25 goals. I'm really am not a fan of back in having to go that low, but I was quite happy given everything we know about Simeone. Had to obviously side on the fact that he was going to revert to type rather than the bit more of the attacking team we have seen at times this season. But now it's gone up to 2.5. Very happy to get involved again, around about 1.85 on the exchange. They only had seven shots in the first leg. That's obviously because they literally had no interest in, well, not no interest, little interest in going forward while the tie was level. Obviously,
Yeah.
able to keep Inter out for a long period of that game. And I'm not quite sure how Inter are going to approach this with that one goal lead. They are favourites to win this game at 7-5, which I thought maybe it might be a bit more 50-50 given. Atletico have obviously got the greater motivation, but Boise described obviously how well statistically Jan Sommer has been this season. But it's in the big games as well. It's not against your Veronas and your Frosinones, etc., where he's kept his clean sheets against Juve, Napoli twice, Lazio twice, Atalanta, Bologna, and Bologna are fantastic, Sociedad, Roma, Fiorentina twice, and even in the games they have conceded that it's been limited, 1-1 the Juve, 1-1 at Sociedad. So in my mind, I think this is going to be again tight and cagey, and I think Atletico will probably won't go for it early on. It will be towards the latter stages where they try and go for it. I think Simeone, as much as he will probably revert to type, I think he does respect the fact this Inter team is very, very good, and it could be futile to go for it early and concede a goal. And then you need, I know there's no away goals, but you still need two, and it's hard enough to get one against this Inter team. So yeah, under 2.5 goals. And then another bet that I really, really liked as well, which has been boosted on the sports book, is Rodrigo De Paul and Mkhitaryan both to commit two or more fouls. Because I mentioned about the tetchiness, I think will increase. I would definitely look at backing cards in the second half of this game, as obviously as tempers and things get high. But yeah, De Paul and Mkhitaryan both to commit two or more fouls. De Paul averages over one foul per game in the Champions League this season. Mkhitaryan over one foul across all comps, and they both committed two in the first leg. So there'd definitely be a case of revenge in my mind.
I feel like De Paul could pick up two fouls just lining up for the Champions League anthem, to be honest. I feel like he's always fouling people. Mark, is your view on this similar? We're going to have something cagey, something violent, something kind of grimly fascinating here.
Hopefully so. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this one.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, on the match prices, Stinch sort of suggested it, but I'm rarely interested or excited to back a team who don't need to win. as Inter are in this case at kind of these kind of prices, especially being favoured away at Atletico Madrid. And look, I've huge respect for Inter Milan. I definitely believe that they're contenders, challengers to go the distance this year. But yeah, I just, you know, they don't need to win this game, so they're already favoured. So I'm kind of almost happy to oppose that kind of price, just off the bat, really. So the dynamics are definitely not in their favour. They're more so in Atletico's favour. And yeah, the defeat at Cadiz at the weekend, a defeat away at San Siro in the first game. Their away record has been horrendous for quite some time. You've already sort of highlighted that. But their record at the Metropolitano is astonishingly good. Go back to mid-January in 2023. They've lost once at home across all comps. That was that against Athletic in the Copa del Rey a few weeks back. Their return in those fixtures, 27 wins, 3 draws, 1 defeat. They've also the only side to beat Real Madrid this season. And, you know, that commands huge respect for me. With or without Griezmann, I think they will be very, very competitive. And immediately I was kind of drawn to something pro-Atletico. I was looking at Atletico double chance and perhaps partnering it alongside under 3.5 goals. But I've kind of gone elsewhere because about an hour before the show, we got our referees confirmed for the second legs on the Wednesday. And it's the Polish guy, Simon Marciniak, a very experienced referee. Since you said about second half cards, that is his penchant. He loves a second half card. But I looked at the price for both teams to collect over 1.5 cards and under 3.5 goals. Comes in at 2.05 on the Bet Builder. And that really does appeal to me. The cards angle won quite convincingly in the first leg. And if you look at Marciniak, he's played, or he's refereed 3 games in the group stages this season and flashed 19 cards across those 3 games. He gave 2 each to all 3 teams, or to all 6 teams, I should say. Last season, he gave at least 4 cards in 6 of 8 Champions League ties as well. And yeah, I looked at Inter as well, just because, you know, they've got that first leg lead. Looked at last season, they beat Porto 1-0 at home, played out a 0-0 in the second fixture. Similarly, they beat Milan in the derby 2-0 before the second leg ended 1-0 in the semi-finals. The Porto tie did go differently. Inter did have a 2-goal lead going into that away leg, so different dynamics there. But I think the track record there kind of definitely breeds into what Stinch is suggesting here. We could and should be in for another tight, close, competitive encounter with plenty of violence, with things potentially spilling over in the second half. But we had a winner in the first leg as well when we backed both teams to have a foul inside the first 10 minutes. So yeah, I'd be looking at that as well. It's not priced up yet on the sportsbook, but if you can get close to evens, yeah, I'd gobble that up because this is going to be feisty.
Yes, lovely stuff. I'll be commentating on that on Wednesday, so I'm looking forward to that very much. That's all we have time for on this edition of Football Only Better. Please do remember to gamble responsibly. Remember, we've got loads of good Cheltenham Festival preview content for you, not only on our website, betting.betfair.com, but also we've got Cheltenham Only Better as part of the Betfair podcast family. We've got the usual weekend previews coming up later in the week, so make sure you check all of those out. All of our shows now on Betfair's new YouTube channel for non-racing content, so make sure you like and subscribe. From Stinch, from Mark, from Big Bad Boise, and from me, it's goodbye for now.